In this episode of our long read series, we look at one man's story and how it typifies the complex and often selective colonial history of our country. It's the legacy of Lachlan Macquarie, who was the governor of New South Wales in the early 1800s. Described by some as a visionary and a champion of equality, his record also shows a man who ruthlessly tried to crush the resistance of First Nations people. Now, institutions are grappling with Macquarie's legacy, how he should be remembered, and how his record might be rewritten. I'm Sydney Lang from RMIT on Wurundjeri Country. This is Making a Difference, a Junction Journalism podcast.
Father of the nation, visionary, emancipist. 200 years ago, Governor Lachlan Macquarie had a vision for New South Wales to turn a languishing colony into a prosperous, thriving society.
This recording from a documentary by the State Library of New South Wales tells some of the story of Lachlan Macquarie, a man who left an enduring mark on Australia despite spending just 12 years of his life here. A soldier in the British Army, Macquarie was sent by the UK government in 1810 to take over as the fifth governor of the colony of New South Wales. He inherited a territory rife with conflict after the Rum Rebellion and the ousting of his predecessor, William Bligh. Macquarie arrived in Australia with his wife Elizabeth and a young boy named George, who he had purchased as a slave during his time in India. His arrival also coincided with many more boatloads of convicts from the UK. And here's where the colonial narrative of Lachlan Macquarie's story takes one path. According to some historians, Macquarie was a Renaissance governor who was instrumental in shaping the social and economic fabric of colonial Australia. His vision for town planning and architecture can still be seen today. Under his leadership, hospitals, roads, banks, and churches were built, laying the foundation for what would become the sprawling city of Sydney and beyond. Macquarie also put an emphasis on education, building schools for the children of settlers and convicts. But building things and the vision it required was not the only achievement that Macquarie was lauded for. Historical accounts have praised him as a humanitarian for the way he transformed the penal settlement into a free society. Macquarie wanted convicts who'd been shipped to Australia, he called them emancipists, to be readmitted into society once they'd served the time for their crime. He believed people should have the chance to reform themselves, a concept considered unthinkable in the ruling United Kingdom. Some historians credit this philosophy as the beginning of the Australian notion of the fair go, a society where all people have equal opportunities. In fact, Macquarie was so eulogised that an inscription on his tombstone in Scotland describes him, some might say audaciously, as the father of Australia. Clearly, in many of the history books, he was regarded as instrumental in the building of colonial Australia. And yet, even as I recount Macquarie's part of Australia's history, context is particularly important. He arrived on this continent at a time of turmoil and violence. The invasion and colonisation of the land 2 decades earlier was still being resisted by First Nations people. Clashes were often deadly and Indigenous people were massacred in large numbers.
I can accept that that's an incredibly important contribution, but I can't disentangle it from the actions of a genocidal autocrat.
That's Richie Howard, an emeritus professor at Macquarie University. He's a renowned academic in the field of Indigenous rights, and the genocidal autocrat he's referring to is the very same Lachlan Macquarie, the nation builder, the egalitarian, who also left a shameful legacy.
Who exercised power in a way that was directed against Aboriginal people in the most violent way, including military orders, not just to pursue and execute people, but to hang them from poles along the Richmond Road in order to strike terror into the heart of any Aboriginal resistance. Now, that sounds like a genocidal terrorist to me.
The The year was 1816, and Macquarie was 6 years into his term as the Governor of New South Wales. First Nations people across Australia were trying to defend their ancestral lands from the encroaching colonial settlers. Attacks and reprisal attacks were common. Many women, men, and children died on both sides. One particular front was at Appin, in the highlands to the south of Sydney on Darug country. As the Australian Museum has documented, Governor Macquarie launched a brutal campaign to terrorise Indigenous people. In his words, it was to punish those hostile natives who were not submitting to colonial rule. Macquarie's pursuit of Indigenous people was brazen. On April 10, 1816, he wrote this in his diary.
I have directed as many natives as possible to be made prisoners with the view of keeping them as hostages. Until the real guilty ones have surrendered themselves or have been given up by their tribes to summary justice.
Macquarie's order doesn't stop there.
If the natives made the smallest show of resistance, or refused to surrender, military officers were authorized to shoot at them.
The governor wanted any Indigenous people killed during the attack to be hanged on trees in order to strike great terror into the survivors. Macquarie had issued orders that women and children be spared, but that didn't happen. In the massacre at Appin, at least 14 Dharawal women, men and children were killed by officers of the 46th Regiment, although the true numbers of deaths will never really be known. Now we know more about Lachlan Macquarie's time in charge of the colony. The issue is how his contribution to the country should be recorded.
Macquarie probably has more names on the map than almost any other figure in Australian history. He put many of those names there himself. So whatever else he was an arrogant prat.
And the reason why there is a reckoning about Macquarie's legacy is because his name is ubiquitous in New South Wales. Macquarie Bank, Macquarie University, the city of Port Macquarie, there's Macquarie River, the Sydney suburb of Macquarie Fields, Macquarie Pass across the Great Dividing Range. Macquarie Street is now home to the New South Wales Parliament. There are many more namesakes around the state and the country, but given his record, some think that should change.
There are things to celebrate in Macquarie's legacy, but can they outweigh the things that are so shameful? If we can't actually recognise that complexity in our history, we will fail to see it in our present.
Professor Richie Howe at stake in Macquarie's legacy is not an idle interest. He was appointed to Macquarie University back in 1992, and it's where he forged an international reputation as a researcher in Indigenous rights. And in those early days, he says the university fell conveniently silent on Macquarie's record. Richie Howe is among those who think it's time to rewrite the colonial narratives of our history, to acknowledge the past as it happened, the good and the bad. He says this is out of respect for the way Indigenous lives and communities were ruined by the brutality of colonial settlement.
But if we take the language of reconciliation is not Aboriginal people, First Nation business. It's actually white fella business. And it's the process of beginning to understand that there is an ongoing responsibility for being the privileged legatees of theft and violence.
Some want Macquarie's name erased altogether from the landmarks that adorn it, whereas others want these monuments and landmarks to remain, but to also tell the full story of the governor's impact. In 2021, a petition was presented to New South Wales Parliament calling for the statue of Macquarie to be removed from Hyde Park in Sydney CBD. The statue, which stands several metres tall, was commissioned just 10 years ago. Its plaque reads, "He was a perfect gentleman, a Christian and a supreme legislator of the human heart." The head of Indigenous Studies at Macquarie University, Professor Bronwyn Carlson, told ABC Radio National the monument ignores the trauma of the First Nations people that he tried to crush.
Well, if we think about it, if there's a statue of Governor Macquarie, would changing the plaque to say, okay, he is not a kind gentleman or whatever the verse is on his plaque, would people be satisfied to say this? Here stands a mass murderer who ordered the genocide of Indigenous people. Do you really think that people would like to see that? I don't. And what would it be amended to, though, would be the argument. I mean, if you amended it to reflect his own statements from his own words, where he's ordering the death and murder of Indigenous people, here stands a man who ordered the death of Indigenous people. Here's a man who ordered Indigenous people to be slaughtered on site. Is that the kind of plaque we want?
Professor Carlson says that the debate goes beyond Macquarie's statue and his other namesakes. She says it's the need for truth-telling about our history and the reconciliation that can happen when we acknowledge the reality of colonial settlement in Australia. And on Lachlan Macquarie, there are signs of progress along that path. Macquarie University now acknowledges the conflict of its namesake. It has an Indigenous strategy to improve success in education for Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander students and staff. The university also has a namesake working group that's trying to find solutions to the challenges of Macquarie's legacy. These include renaming the main campus, Wallamudigal, a name taken from the language of the Darug people, the traditional owners of the land. There's also a compulsory learning module for all students about the legacy of the uni's namesake, and tellingly, a scholarship that acknowledges the Appin massacre deaths.
So the university has accepted that the commemoration of those 14 lives lost is a responsibility of the university that bears Macquarie's name, and they levy student fees an amount of $1.40 per student in recognition of the 14 lost lives into a scholarship fund. In many ways, that act of linking an act of generosity and reaching out by the university to the terrorism executed by the Crown through Macquarie is actually a really important link.
The university says these are early steps in relearning Australia's colonial history on the path towards reconciliation. Longer term, will the name of the university change? There's no sign that will happen. In any case, Macquarie University can't just erase its name. It's a public institution, and therefore any change would have to be made by the New South Wales Parliament. Richie Howitt says the state government doesn't appear to have the appetite for it, at least for the moment.
So those shameful names, that shame should never be allowed to be erased, because if we think we can erase it by simply removing the names, and if there was no name to push against, then how do we own that legacy? And I don't know the answer to that, because I'd love to erase the name. But there's a responsibility that goes with erasing the name to maintain the rage, if you like, to not forget.
The legacy of Lachlan Macquarie is complicated. His imprint is still present more than 200 years later, so it's fair to say that he did have an impact on this country. And it's not just the physical, the buildings, the roads, the schools and the hospitals. It's also part of the ethos we like to tell ourselves about Australia. The fair go, that everyone is equal. But we can't just cling to the things that are convenient and comfortable. Macquarie's impact on First Nations people continues to be felt today. And in the words of Richie Howitt, we have to learn. And in order to learn, we have to listen to Indigenous people so we can reconcile our past and forge a better future. This story was written and produced by me, Sydney Lang from RMIT. Links to the interview by Bronwyn Carlson on ABC Radio National and the State Library of New South Wales documentary on Lachlan Macquarie can be found in the show notes. Making a Difference is a production by Junction Journalism. You can subscribe on your favourite podcast app. Stay tuned for more in our series, The Long Read, in coming episodes. And for more stories from the best student journalism in Australia, go to our website, junctionjournalism.com. Thanks for listening. next time on Making a Difference.
All of this has a significant influence on the rental market. In 2023, more than 500,000 international students came to Australia.
We're in the middle of a rental crisis, but often students are so desperate for accommodation that they can be exploited.
Because it is competitive to find a rental in Australia, some of those are turning to brokers in their own country to find a home.
We suspect there's an element of scams originating onshore and scams originating offshore in lots of different ways.
International students can become desperate. They know they might be exploited.
It was stressful, particularly when you're not in the country. We have never been here and we did have to place of trust in people we didn't know.